Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. It is that after Autumn Nations feeling when we are back. Breakfast show edition, Matt, David and Alan, to wrap up everything that went on in Scotland's four big games, but also cast an eye forward. Looking forward to the State of the Nation ahead of the Six Nations, which will be with us in a mere, I think it's like 68 days or something like that until we take on England at Murrayfield. So something very much to look forward to once we get the trifling matter of Christmas and the 1872 Cup out of the way. Alan, have you got your triple caramel foam latte ready to go this morning?
No, I've decided to sort of push myself and follow Matt's lead and go for sort of the black coffee. And I'm not going to lie, I'm hating it.
No one enjoys it in the first place. You've got to sort of wean yourself onto it, I think.
You're just sitting there drinking black coffee, thinking, like cursing the people that invented coffee and being like, had you guys not heard of Terry's chocolate orange when you did this? Like, what the hell?
But I imagine there's like levels. It's just like Nescafe with hot boiling water in a mug isn't the nicest thing in the world, is it?
Yeah, you've got to sort of put a bit of milk in that guy. Yeah, some sugar maybe.
Yeah, you really got to take the edge off that. Matt, how are you doing? Are you having your dry granola, just starting the day in that sort of manner in which you enjoy?
Yeah, you know me, cold shower, black coffee, that kind of thing. Did you see? Speaking of 1872 Cup, did you see the promo video that Edinburgh launched yesterday about it?
Is it the one that had lots of like, it was like fast cut and like word, yeah, like single words? Yeah,
it was some really great marketing copy.
It was like thing. Friends, beers, rugby, enthusiasm, noise.
It said, this is not just a derby, this is bigger than all of us.
Bigger than all of us?
Yeah, that's literally what it said, which I thought was amazing.
That's incredible.
It's also like the exact definition of a derby.
Yeah.
Was there any here I was thinking that, you know, climate change was the big thing that we all needed, that was bigger than all of us, when actually it was the 1872 Cup. You don't hear politicians talking about it as much, though.
I know, they really should.
I did see Sturgeon threw out a message to Hoggy, though.
Did she?
Yeah. She was like, congratulations on becoming like top try scorer in Scottish rugby history. Sturgeon loves Scottish rugby.
She does. That photo of her drinking out of the Calcutta Cup is class, to be fair. It's like, yeah. It's like Dave Denton in like Budgie Smugglers standing next to her. It's quite funny. Well, we can save a little bit of that Six Nations and 1872 chat. There's going to be plenty of time to cover that in the weeks and months to come. We've got a little bit of news back to the sort of the normal running order after a few weeks of just looking at team selections and looking forward to games. Some big news in the world rugby with the change to player eligibility rules, which has been designed to allow largely Pacific Islanders who have been capped by New Zealand, England, Australia in the large to go back and play for their home countries, Fiji, Samoa, and Tonga in the large. But it might allow, or it does allow, others to switch their international eligibility, provided that they've not played international rugby for 3 years. So, Alan, why don't you give us a bit of a view on this? And do you reckon we're going to see any rogue Scottish players coming up in the next few years?
Well, I think when most people sort of initially discussed this, they were looking at it through the lens of essentially players that have played for tier one countries sort of dropping down and playing for tier two. But as we discussed off the pod, it feels like that is just too difficult a system to have in place, because it's actually quite hard to put in like a set of like guardrails which say this is definitively a tier one country and this is definitively a tier two country. And then if you sort of use the rankings, if countries like Fiji end up kind of going up the rankings after getting kind of a couple of their players, it then means players can't sort of drop down to play for them. So I thought it was quite likely that if the rules were brought in place, that it would be this sort of all the same for everyone. But yeah, I wonder how sort of prepped sort of the Jim Mallander sort of broader performance team was, and whether they've kind of got a list of players that they had sort of mapped out that, you know, couldn't currently play for them.
But does now, it make a signing like of a guy like Jack Dempsey look more, you know, more planned than perhaps we thought it was at the time? Because I think he played his last fixture for Australia in 2018.
So late 2019.
So actually he will be,
I think, Autumn Internationals.
Next year, he will be eligible. I mean, you could see that could be something that's obviously not written into his contract, but they could say, look, you know, the discussions are ongoing at World Rugby. This could be a thing that, you know, entices him north of to the Northern Hemisphere.
100%. I imagine, you know, it was part of us Scotland sort of consideration process. I can't imagine it was sort of the defining factor, but ultimately, you know, it's a sort of cherry on top of what is potentially kind of a risky signing for Glasgow, right? And he kind of seems to be sort of probably the main player that people are sort of identifying as who under the previous system couldn't have played for Scotland. But now, as I said, coming into sort of Autumn Internationals 2022, I think potentially in the back row after this sort of awesome series, it feels like it would be the worst thing to have a little bit more depth, especially kind of players that can sort of carry the ball. So I imagine Scotland will very quickly be sort of putting a proposition in front of Jack Dempsey that says we want to give you your first cap next year.
How does it sit with you, Matt? There's obviously been huge discussions throughout this Autumn Nations, but also over the last few years about, you know, does residency laws sort of undermine the idea of nationality? And now World Rugby seems to have brought in a situation where you could play for Scotland in 2023 and then say you were English or Welsh or you had another split nationality at the next World Cup, you could just switch your allegiances.
Yeah, I think that side of things is quite strange. And Alan, you were talking about the idea of having a sort of 4 year grace period whereby you couldn't switch in between World Cups. You couldn't play for one country in a World Cup and then play for another one in the next one, which I think is quite reasonable. I think the idea behind it is pretty good. I think that it's obviously aimed at mainly Pacific Islanders, for instance, who've played one or two games for New Zealand and then haven't played again. And I think that clearly someone like Charles Piatau wants to play for Tonga. And I think the fact he's not been allowed to, you know, I don't see a problem with that. But then I do look at that. We talked about the other week, potential Tonga team that Scotland could play in their World Cup pool. And I do get a bit worried. And I think that you can make a lot of examples about you know, the fact that the Vunipoas could play for Wales potentially, and that thought just seems a bit ridiculous, really. And people might say that's a sort of exaggerated example, but I'm pretty sure that Japanese scout at the moment is like working some pretty long days trying to find people who qualify on that basis, because Scotland will do anything in their power to select people.
And we might not like it, but I guess like the SRU's remit is to make like Scotland the most competitive team it can be. And, you know, this potentially does open up a pool of players that, you know, Alan, you found an All Black that might be eligible.
I think you could always assume that an All Black who's played for the Highlanders has like a 50% chance of having like a Scottish Grand Prix.
Yeah, if you're from Dunedin or Invercargill, there's a good chance like that you've got some Scottish blood.
Exactly. So you've got Elliot Dixon, who definitely has Scottish and Irish ancestry, and is currently playing for B Ritz in the back row. He's a bit old, he's like 33, but, you know, ultimately, again, quite an abrasive sort of back row option. Could be quite interesting for Scotland, potentially, you know, not far off sort of like your Matt Ferguson level, to be fair.
Do you think the All Blacks are looking at Hugh Blake and thinking, got a chance to get him back in the system there?
Yeah, Hamilton Burr and Hugh Blake. Oh, no, Hamilton Burr's never capped for Scotland, has he? Sorry. No. Yeah,
John
Hugh
Hardy.
Blake. Phil Burley, John Hardy, yeah, all the big names. England are looking at Daryl Morfo.
Yeah, they'd be mad not to.
Imagine Eddie just did that troll and and called up Daryl Morfo. I think it would be sort of like the pod's greatest moment.
I would happily go into the England changing room and present him with his first cap for England. I'd be so proud of him.
There was a few people floating around whether Redpath would just be sort of continuously injured for sort of 3 years and then would return to England for the next World Cup. But yeah.
I think that would be like an Indy Ref 2 trigger. I think that would be the last straw.
I think there is a few interesting kind of players though for Scotland. I think that Elliot Dixon is an interesting one, and I imagine though Scotland would very quickly be on his sort of radar, because I do think he's a sort of back row player that Scotland don't seem to be able to do. He's probably got a relatively similar vibe to Jamie Ritchie, to be fair. Rory McConachy, I know. Wingers isn't somewhere that we need a lot of depth, but you know, he's pretty strong for Bath, and you know, probably would get in ahead of people like Hoyland, for example.
He's 30 now, so his last cap would have been 2019. So yeah, he could potentially get a cap at 31.
And then, obviously, Zach Mercer, we don't think would be eligible under the current rules. And then Felix Lambe was the one I was quite like floating around. I can never tell whether that's just like a rumor. There was definitely some level. I'm sure there was some level of substance to the fact that he had some sort of Scottish ancestry, but then I can't find it on Google.
And Gregory Aldrich could definitely play as well.
I thought Gregory Aldrich fell into the Zach Mercer camp, where
did he
lived in Scotland for a period of time, but ultimately wasn't born to either Scottish family and wasn't born in Scotland.
Imagine he's just like, he's got the French home World Cup and he's just like, I'm going to stand down this one, guys, because I just want to get into Scotland. I want to get into the Scotland South as quickly as possible. Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of talking, and I guess it's a little bit laughable. It feels, on the one hand, that, you know, the move's been made to make the Pacific Islands like more sort of to make the most of the talent that they have, and there are undoubtedly cases that people have played one cap and now they want to return, and it's good for that sort of side of the game. But these potentially far-fetched options where people can sort of play for two countries is I don't know. It feels a little bit rushed. And I think, Alan, at least your four or five year, why don't they just match the new residency rule to it? Would make more sense to me.
Yeah. So the Tonga team, I'm now more excited because I've now got, well, and a bit petrified, I've got tickets to the Scotland-Tonga game down in Nice, they already had Fekitoa because he sort of qualified through sort of the sevens route, but they're now going to have Piatau, potentially could have Israel Folau, Vea Fafita, George Moala, Augustin Pulu, Sokopu Kepu, and Lumapi. And Lumapi would potentially be qualified. And then I do, yeah. So that
early bath for Scotland at this World Cup, isn't it?
Honestly, it's.
Like when in the Rugby League World Cup, when Tonga got all of their players back who'd played for New Zealand and Australia before, and they wiped the floor with everyone.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. Yeah, and I guess I'm just sort of thinking, you know, looking at sort of Scotland's charge, ultimately, we've been put on sort of probably the much harder side of the draw, especially sort of up to the quarterfinals. So for us to get to the semifinals, we're likely going to have to beat three of that Tonga team, Ireland, South Africa, New Zealand, or France. So to get to the semifinals, we'll have to beat three of those four.
Good.
Which just seems very, and you know, not only given, you know, the issues we've had with sort of South Africa and Ireland and ultimately kind of their level of performance, but the fact that even whether we come first or second in the group, my understanding is we'll have to play either New Zealand or France. And given the New Zealand France match at the weekend, does not fill me with a lot of confidence.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's just sort of.
Well, the pool stages will be nice, at least. It'll be nice for us to beat that sort of Asian repechage winner, hopefully.
Yeah. Maybe just sort of.
It's like Hong Kong, start Hong Kong calling John Barkley. Be like, come on, John. Get in the team. Jesus. Well, we will keep a very close eye on player eligibility. It certainly adds an extra layer of spice to the Six Nations squad announcement to see if the scouting team have picked up anybody that might be able to play for Scotland. A couple of other little bits of news before we get onto a bit of a review of the autumn. The SRU have hired a new, I think he's called Pathway Director, a chap called John Fletcher, who's previously worked for the English Rugby Union as their head of player development and as heading up the academy at Newcastle Falcons. He's going to come in and join Jim Mallander's team. I mean, Matt, does this show the SRU sort of continuing to get a little bit more serious about their that sort of development pathway, not just sending scouts all around the world trying to find people with Scottish grannies?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know that much about the guy, but he was also director of rugby at the Falcons for a few years. So he's got proper pedigree and experience. And I do remember reading when he was let go by the RFU, when I think they had a bit of a clean out of age group coaches. There were a lot of people who were pretty pissed off because I think he was held in really high regard. I think he also helped coach the England under-20s at various points as well. So, as I say, it seems as if he's a well-respected, admired coach. So it's good to see. I think it's good to bring in someone who can maybe come out from outside of the typical SRU pathway, someone with a bit of an outside view, hopefully. And I wonder if sort of Jim Mallander knows him quite well from his time in the RFU before.
I think the general consensus is a lot of the players were very sort of fond of him and actually all thought he was a pretty incredible coach. I think a lot of them actually quite pissed off when he got let go, people mm-hmm. like George Ford and Owen Farrell. So, no, I think the general consensus seems to be it's a pretty great acquisition by the SRU.
High quality appointment and another seemingly good acquisition by the SRU on loan for the time being. But New Scotland cap Ewan Ashman has joined Glasgow on a season long loan from Sale. Alan, does this sort of make sense to you?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got sort of obviously Brown who's been injured. Ewan Ashman's not really getting much sort of game time at Sale. And I would say, I'm not sure exactly what the issue is, but I get the sense that Danny Wilson isn't 100% sold on Turner. He seems to be sort of mixing up sort of Turner and sort of Johnny Matthews for a lot of sort of the Glasgow games. I guess it'd be interesting to see, especially in sort of the 1872 Cup, who he leads with. But no, I think it'd be interesting to see as well, because with Turner's contract coming up at the in the summer, whether he sort of signs an extension or whether someone like Ashman sort of comes in and sort of operates with sort of Fraser Brown in that sort of hooker role.
It will be very, very interesting to see. And New Zealander Josh Mackay has arrived in Glasgow. So when the URC kicks back off over the next few weeks, we may get to see some of these new faces pulling on the Glasgow jersey for the first time. So that's quite exciting. But news dispensed with. Let's look back at the last month or so of international rugby. Scotland obviously picking up 3 wins out of 4, beating Australia, Tonga and Japan, and being downed by South Africa. Matt, I'll come to you first. Why don't you give us your sort of high-level summary of how you think Scotland's autumn went?
Well, I think if at the start someone had offered us 3 wins out of 4, we would have taken that with both hands. But there does seem to be a bit of a sense of disappointment around the performances that actually went in. I think that Tonga was a good exercise in bringing in new players, and I think that those young debutants did really well, but it was a bit of a training run. Australia, to be fair, we managed to find a way to win without playing that well, making a lot of mistakes. South Africa, once again, pretty inaccurate, and Japan was similarly scrappy. So, yeah, I suppose it's a positive that we managed to get that amount of wins without playing that well, but I still think there's quite a few questions that need to be answered, particularly around what we're trying to do in attack, whether we've got the right players in that midfield. So, as I say, I think there's still some areas that are a bit unclear.
Alan, what do you reckon?
Yeah, sort of broadly the same. I think, you know, ultimately can't be too unhappy with sort of 3 or 4, but I think there's a lot of things that I was sort of hoping to see kind of a development on that have either not improved or potentially sort of gone backwards. So I think the first one, that I always think Scotland potentially should be sort of like the best in the sort of tier one countries, just given the level of game time we have together, is like lineouts or like just general sort of set piece. And I just think we still can't seem to kind of quite nail it as a team. And I think, you know, ultimately when these majority of players play together, when Scotland players probably get the most time together of any of the top nations, it feels like specifically the lineout should be something that we are absolutely nailing. And I think it's just deeply frustrating that in a couple of sort of the key moments, especially in that South Africa game, that is an area where it sort of failed. I think, agree with Matt, I think especially in that, you know, defensively, I actually think we had sort of relatively sort of strong autumn internationals, but the attack, just outside of sort of kind of ad hoc moments, just didn't quite seem to be clicking. And I think actually Price kind of continued to have a relatively sort of strong series. Finn just continues to just not be able to have that sort of level of consistency that I think is sort of needed for us to be able to, you know, drive, get through sort of a game like that South Africa match, or at least, you know, in the Japan game, I think, you know, put away a team which ultimately we're a lot better than sort of the scoreline suggested. And I think it's interesting with that sort of centre combination again, like super, super strong in defence, but I was quite surprised, you know, for example, that Harris got man of the match of the weekend, because I think ultimately in attack was sort of really struggling to kind of cut open defences with that sort of 10, 12, 13 axis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Finn, you mentioned Finn there, he's come under quick criticism from some quarters for his performance over autumn. And obviously he'd sort of dropped out of the starting team at Racing 92. Matt, is that, I suppose, a concern for you with the Six Nations round the corner? You know, this Scotland team feels like it needs a fit and firing Finn Russell if it's going to reach the sort of heights that it needs to perform well in that tournament.
In some ways, I wouldn't be surprised if come that England game or the France game, for instance, he has an absolute blinder and wins it for us almost single-handedly. But and people will make the argument that you can't, you've got to take the good with the bad with him, and he won't do these amazing things unless he's constantly trying them, and they won't constantly come off, which I do understand. But I think at the same time, as Alan said, that consistency isn't there. And, you know, it's a matter of decision-making, I suppose, rather than, you know, the execution of it. It's knowing when these things are on and when these things aren't. And I think that in the series, particularly against South Africa, maybe, you know, a lot of the sort of kicks from hand when it wasn't really on, put us under a lot of pressure. And we know that when we play against, you know, an Ireland or even a Wales sometimes, like it's that those pressure games that we can't quite seem to handle. I mean, I just wonder if he looks up and sees who he has in his midfield, and he knows that they're great defensively, but he doesn't really see someone with another playmaking option like Cam Redpath, for instance. And that's when he starts to try and do it all by himself.
Do you think the pack across the Autumn series gave him a good enough platform?
Yeah, possibly not. I mean, to be fair, if you think of like the South Africa game or something, the amount of penalties we were given at the breakdown. And I think one of the most disappointing things about the Autumn was just our inability to build attack. We hardly went through the phases at all. And almost, as you were saying, Alan, our tries came out of speculative individual bits of brilliance. So, you know, maybe, and I think some of that isn't just the forwards, because I think it's general inaccuracy, a lot of handling errors, but potentially, yeah, if the forwards aren't giving you that ball, it's difficult to build phases.
I guess the slightly more sort of positive view is the number of caps that were sort of given out without probably disrupting the team sort of too much, you know, just kind of like having that level of that number of players coming in. I've stolen from On Top of the Moon some the 15 players across 2021 who have been capped by Scotland, which is the highest since like 1947. And wonder if we play a little quiz, see if you can both knock out all 15 players from the 2021 season.
Mm-hmm. Can certainly try. Do you want to go first, Matt? Just name one about.
Dave, you need to go first. You need the help.
I should be okay. I mean, my short-term memory is okay.
All right, Matt. You go.
Josh Bayliss.
Oh, yeah. Josh Bayliss, 24 years old. He's still a youngster.
And he was a good guy to add to the mix.
He was a good addition to the mix.
And Jamie Hodgson.
Jamie Hodgson is correct.
Rufus McLean.
Correct. 21.
Marshall Sykes.
Correct. Also 21. Big boy for 21.
Such a big boy.
I hadn't realised. I thought he was like 23, 24.
Pierre Schumann.
Correct. Also probably had a slightly above average.
Yeah.
Than I was expecting.
He's
I would
a
say.
Good addition.
Yeah.
Ewan Ashman.
Ewan Ashman is correct.
Another good addition. Who's that Welsh lad? Havan Sebastier or something.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Something like that, or the other way. Ryan.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not quite sure if he's as good an addition.
think he fits the bill of like he's big enough to stand up a scrum.
Yeah, he's 100%. If we hadn't had Yavin, it was Gordy Reid who was getting shipped in.
Yes. Starting for Gordy Wasps. Reid,
yeah, once again, playing for Wasps.
That wasn't like the Premiership Cup at the weekend, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Tupelotu.
Again, 24. I didn't really realise how young he was.
Right, I'm probably beginning to struggle.
Seven left from the whole of 2021.
Seven.
Remember, that includes...
Oh, Cameron Redpath. Yeah.
Correct.
Scott Steele.
No, Scott Steele is incorrect.
Really?
Yeah.
He played in 2020?
He got capped. He 100% came off the bench for Scotland in the...
In the autumn.
In the autumn in 2020.
Sort of the sad autumn 2020. He's got a try at the weekend for Quinns, assisted by Hugh Jones.
Yes, Hugh Jones actually looked like he was playing quite well, to be fair.
Yeah, it did.
Right, Dave, 5-4 to you, and you've
Jamie Doby.
Doby is correct.
That was going to be mine. I think I'm struggling now.
You went for a little bit more of an artisan pick for your scrum half choice.
I was quite pleased with it as well.
Like a hipster, yeah.
Yeah.
What you got, Matt?
I'm just thinking.
I've actually got another one, so.
Dave, it's on to you. Who have you got?
Yeah, I don't know.
Dylan Richardson.
Dylan Richardson is correct. 7-4 to Dave with four left. You got three forwards and one back.
I'll three forwards and one back.
Open up to the floor.
Christ.
There's one key one from the Six Nations.
Doohan.
No.
He was the autumn as well, wasn't he?
My years are mixed up.
That's COVID for you.
Yeah, I know.
One key one from the autumn. Forward or the back, are they key?
Key one from the Six Nations. Right, I think that's it. Yeah, Dave, take the win. 7-4, actually. It's a bit of a pumping, actually.
Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Dave well Cherry.
Oh, Chezza. Okay.
Alex Craig, Luke Crosby, and then the back was Ross Thompson.
Of course. You would say on balance, though, that most of those players you can see going on and getting more Scotland caps.
Yeah. No, you know, actually, as you sort of went through that list and just actually looking at sort of the age profile and probably sort of how a lot of them performed across both kind of the Six Nations and the Autumn Internationals, it actually does fill you with a lot of enthusiasm. I feel like that's got to be your number one benefit. Is I feel like going through the sort of, you think about sort of the World Cup cycle and ultimately us being sort of, you know, basically just under 2 years out. At least sort of trying to sort of use this autumn series to sort of blood a few of those sort of younger players that potentially might either start or at least be part of kind of like the broader squad when we get to France.
Absolutely. Should we get into the autumn categories? Kicking off, Matt, I'll come to you.
I was just going to say, do you think, Matt, you know, to your point about the centre issue, do you think that just reaffirms how important potentially Cam Redpath is? And it seems mad given the fact he's only had one cap for Scotland. And I don't know whether we just sort of then kind of overblow it or potentially how impactful he could be. But it feels like that 12 position could be sort of a bit of a game changer for Scotland.
Yeah, he does almost seem the perfect accompaniment to Finn. I do think that Johnson has playmaking abilities, whether he's not used in the right way or doesn't feel sort of able to do so, I don't know, and maybe thinks of himself more as just someone who's crashing things up, or he looks outside and doesn't really see another sort of distributor, I don't know. But I just think also at the same time, like, we need to find a way to bring Doohan into the game more, or get Darcy Graham on the ball more, and Hogg, which I don't think we make the most of those guys, and they come into the game and show how good they are, but it's almost off their own back rather than a strategy of getting them into things. But once again, at the same time, it's difficult to do that when you just can't keep hold of the ball, which is one of the biggest issues over the autumn.
Are we at risk of turning Cam Redpath into our David Miliband? Is he just going to be like the person that we're always like, when he comes back, everything will be fine?
I thought you were going to make a more relatable kind of comparison.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Is my new labor comparison not worthy?
I just thought you were going to be like R2 Laggy or something.
Yeah, I think after 150 like it. Episodes, it's established that I don't know that much about rugby. So I've got a pool from what I know.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, fair.
Matt, why don't you come in with a nomination for best player of the autumn for Scotland then?
I think possibly Schoeman could be the best player. I think that we...
Interesting.
I think we know... I think Doohan, Hogg at points, Ritchie at points, Price all had good autumns, but I don't think that was a huge surprise. And I think that Schoeman coming in at Loosehead, a position where we've maybe struggled a little bit in recent years. I mean, maybe shown no better by the fact that we've had to have Gordy Reid coming in to the Scotland camp. No offense to him. But I think he showed up well. I even think he showed up well against South Africa, which is a big test for him. And yeah, he just adds another option in a position that really needed some depth. So I think he could be a contender.
You can just hear the Doohan lobby on Twitter just getting so angry at you, not putting him as an absolute shoo-in. Alan, are you who are you putting forward?
I think there's broadly no particular sort of standout players. I think there was kind of a lot of players that had sort of specific games. I think Price was very solid,
yeah,
across sort of the majority of the series. I think his box kicks continue to be basically on the money every time, which is just such a great weapon, especially when you've got Doohan absolutely charging down the wing. Must be the worst thing in the world.
The worst sight in world rugby.
Oh my God, it'd be absolutely horrific. But yeah, I think Doohan had a good awesome series. And then I think probably just Ritchie, I was gonna say Ritchie and Watson. And I feel like they both at the same time had a really strong series, but probably didn't quite elevate the game. Maybe it's just again sort of zeroing in on that South Africa match where ultimately that's kind of the standard that I think they both, and it's obviously a little bit different for Watson because he only plays sort of 30 minutes, but for someone like Ritchie, I feel like that South Africa game is ultimately the standard that he's going to be reaching, and I think he probably a little bit was sort of outperformed around the breakdown versus a lot of those sort of South African forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of pure world-class moments, I think Doohan had more than any other player for Scotland.
I mean, he just ran over a Japanese scrum half, and it is great to watch, to be fair. But that's your core Doohan, right?
The SRU are putting out, they've got a sort of supercut of that moment with Power by Kanye West playing on their Instagram.
Right.
Just pure content. Everything is content. Suppose, and I think Doohan is, he was more world-class content than everyone else.
He also did play very well against South Africa, I thought, which is good to see.
That run our own 5-meter line when we were really under the cosh was incredible.
And ultimately that first hog try, and actually both hog tries wouldn't have happened without him. And I think he could have easily had a bit of a post-Lions hangover, and it didn't seem to affect him against South Africa. So yeah, I think he was really good, but it's just the fact that we already knew how effective he can be.
And he scored what? Six tries in 8 games across 2021. Imagine if he'd had a few sort of if he'd be played against Georgia and Romania, probably could have tapped up to about 12.
Yeah.
Do you think Hoggy's like, shit, I need to keep going because, like, Doohan, if Doohan gets sort of like 5 or 6 years of Scotland under his belt, he's got a good chance of already taking my title.
I did see that this year Doohan scored 8 tries, and in 2010, Scotland as a collective scored 5 tries across the whole season.
Yeah. Really?
It's just like, was it Tony Stanger that Hogg took over from?
Yeah.
He must have just been loving like the early 2000s, the early 2010s when we weren't scoring tries. He's like, that is an unassailable record.
But also, Darcy Graham's got a really good score rate. He's 1 and 2, I think. He's on 10 or 11 or so.
He doesn't start as much, but I think George Horn's got like an offensive Scotland scoring rate as well.
Yeah.
But he does. That is what he does. But why don't we give best player to Doohan with some honourable mentions to Sherman and to Ali Price, who I absolutely agree has sort of maintained that sort of high quality form that he picked up and the confidence that he got from the Lions' experience. What about like a best moment, like an individual moment? I think sort of nominees. I think Hoggy breaking that. Breaking that record, maybe some of those Doohan moments against South Africa. But Alan, have you got anything to chuck into the mix?
It's not an individual moment, but I think first 15 minutes against South Africa, Scottish D in the sort of 22, and just sort of like being able to sort of hold back sort of wave after wave of like Esther Beth and sort of Khaleesi, etc. I think was just like a really... At the time, I know we obviously ended up going on to sort of lose that match, but I think showed sort of an increased level of sort of grit and abrasiveness that potentially the sort of Scotland pack didn't have even sort of 2 years ago. And I think ultimately, sort of, if we and again that was with a pack that was missing sort of 4 or 5 sort of first team sort of players. So I think,
yeah,
you know, looking at defence across the whole of the autumn series, I feel like the sort of good news story that came out of sort of the Six Nations of just kind of that improvement in defence for Scotland has sort of carried over. And I think ultimately the kind of big question for Tooney is how can we maintain that level of defence, but kind of bring our attacking game kind of back up to kind of what it has been over the last sort of 2 years. Also, just stop giving lots of penalties away because it's really
Penalties.
Yes, I think the penalty count is certainly a concern. Matt, have you got a moment that sticks in the mind?
I think being at the stand for at Murrayfield for the two Scotland tries in that game, in the South Africa game, were really special.
Yeah,
actually, and I think for a game that was fairly turgid, gave the crowd exactly what they wanted. Everyone was on their feet, fully involved. I think the other favourite moment that was then followed by crushing disappointment was when Hogg had just scored a second try. We were 7 points down and he boomed a spiral that Kinghorn then chased. And
oh, that was class.
I can't remember who it was on the wing. It might have been Mapimpi, but took him down, we get the penalty, line out. You know, that was almost the biggest cheer of the day in anticipation.
Mm. Yeah, and then the atmosphere that built there was incredible. Yeah,
it was amazing. And then we lost the line out.
Yeah.
I think the other moment I would say, thinking about it, is once again, I know it was only Tonga, but Rufus McLean announcing himself on the international stage was pretty awesome. His second try in particular. That once again, that's sort of box office stuff.
Yeah, I was going to go for the sort of the debutante narrative, so the Rufus McLean, and then the Ewan Ashman finish against Australia, both just like really, really class moments. And I know it's not like a rugby moment, but having not been at Murrayfield for quite a long time, to go to going for the South Africa game. The second verse of Flower of Scotland when they cut the music in a full Murrayfield is absolutely awesome. And having not felt that for so long, it's so good.
Mm.
I really do think they've got that nailed.
Just need to play the games a little bit later.
Yeah, it was so strange that lunchtime kickoff. in like beautiful sunshine in Edinburgh. It was strange.
Yeah.
But if that had been under the lights, pitch black, second verse against South Africa, incredible.
We're winning that.
We're probably still overthrowing that line out and not, you know, not scoring that try. But yeah, so plenty of amazing moments for us to look back on. Alan, plenty of newcomers this autumn. Who do you think performed the best?
I guess in terms of newcomer, I mean, whether you consider sort of Schumann a newcomer, I guess you do, but it feels like he's obviously been on the radar for a long time. I think to Matt's point earlier, he sort of performed at a higher level than I had initially sort of anticipated. So which was good to see. I think a couple of players that probably had a few moments, sort of Bayliss looked fairly strong when he was on the pitch, yep. Which I think is sort of an interesting addition for Scotland. I think ultimately, you know, Matt Ferguson, whilst obviously looked kind of strong when he came off the bench against Japan, still hasn't quite managed to sort of nail down that sort of third spot in the back row. And I think ultimately sort of having Bayliss there, good to sort of spur him on, but also just kind of good for Scotland to have that sort of additional option if needed. Because ultimately Matt Ferguson also is just incredibly injury prone, right? Mm. So good to have him there.
Matt, what do you reckon? Are you going with Bayliss?
Yeah, I had quite high hopes for Bayliss, and I think that he delivered on them. I think, once again, I think Rufus McLean's a newcomer. I think although he got caught out for that South Africa try, I think he's shown enough with the ball in hand that he could be a challenger. Someone who I think you say is a winner from the series is, and playing in a different position than he's used to, is Blair Kinghorn, who I think is slowly being positioned as like a core bench option for Scotland, whether you agree with it or not.
Have we ever established why Blair Kinghorn is like so hated by like a small sort of subsection of Scottish rugby fandom?
No. People should write in thethistlerugby@gmail.com. Tell us why you hate Blair Kinghorn.
send your anthrax letters to us instead.
Yeah. I'll give just you like, yeah.
He's such a real sort of like trigger point for just sort of like maybe like 15 to 20 people on Twitter, I think. Any sort of like complimentary sort of updates and people just like absolutely like piling in.
Yeah. It does seem to be sometimes quite personal as well. It's like, oh, I just don't like his attitude. Like, I don't understand. What's he shown before? What's he done?
And it's definitely like the same people that are like, God damn it, Finn, the Maverick. I love him.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
I generally think like Finn just like comes out with stuff that like if he was like any other nationality or like wasn't as like rogue, everyone would be like, fucking hell, mate, sort your shit out. The fact... having like five guys and like beans and toast like pre rugby, it's like, yeah, it's great. And look, I am in absolutely no position to judge anyone's kind of like eating habits, but it's like, I don't know, just like have like a healthy pasta.
Exactly.
Yeah, take your career like a couple of percent more seriously. That's all we're really asking.
Yeah, exactly. It's like no one's asking you to change your demeanor on the pitch. It's just like ensuring that like your body and just like in general sort of kind of self is just in like the right like space, like in terms of preparing for the match, you know. Just
it like, is freakish though, because like Finn is a really good defender, like he bangs people. It's mental.
But is like, he that good a defender?
I think if you were to show me a picture of Finn and then show me some of his tackling, I'd be like, he's outperforming his body.
It's a miracle.
is Finn kind of like an argument for why I will be able to take down George Horn in a 5 meter channel? You know, ultimately, body shape and like isn't an indicator of whether you can put in the hit.
I think you're possibly reaching there.
Yeah. But I think that would be a worry for you then, because like George Horn, for instance, isn't as big as you, but he would absolutely kill you.
Yeah. But see, there's power and then there's like mass. I've got a lot of mass.
Yeah, but when your mass is backed up by zero power, that's you can deal with that. You know?
I think you would just have to time your sort of like Terry's chocolate orange hot chocolate. So just like you're getting a huge energy rush just before George Horn's coming down a 5 meter channel at you.
Fair.
That's your spinach. That's your Popeye equivalent of spinach. It's just like a massive like iced latte.
Yeah.
Another shout for best newcomer, Matt. Pint cans of Tennent's available at Murrayfield.
Yeah, it's a really nice touch. Makes everyone's life a lot easier as well. I think they should have, you know, at the Stadio Olimpico, they have the people who walk up and down the steps with the
bags of ice buckets,
like rucksacks of cans. That's the next step for Murrayfield. Although it might be complete carnage.
That is the worst bit, I think, of the match day experience. And I guess it's not their fault, but like people getting up in between, like not at halftime, but like going and getting drinks like while the games are still on. That's a real pet peeve of mine, which would be solved by your sort of people selling stuff in the stadium.
The downside to bringing cans in, allowing cans, is it's very easy to then bring cans in yourself out with the stadium, which I may or may not have done for the South Africa game.
Jesus.
Jesus Christ, mate.
I don't think I was the only one.
I'm going to refer you to Police Scotland.
I feel like it's been a good autumn series for cans of Tennent's, but not a good autumn series for general drinking at rugby matches.
Yeah, I do think that guy throwing up on the kid at Wales is pretty poor.
It's
not great.
There's not a lot of ways around that. Well, that's sort of best newcomer. One eye on the time here, fellas. This is the breakfast show. We've got jobs to go to. And I think, Alan, is your child just lying sort of unlooked after in a door next door?
No, thankfully, Ash's meeting got cancelled. So, but I have just been like, my basic Freya has been crying this whole call. I'm just like hiding in like a side room. It's like not hoping this
actually, call actually sort of is last. A saint.
Yeah, 100%.
And we thank, you know, the Scottish Rugby Public thanks her for her dedication. Why don't we then look ahead to what we've learned, obviously, throughout the autumn. How does this play out in the Six Nations? It feels to me that it was pretty good. But if you look at France, if you look at England, if you look at Ireland, you know, Matt, those teams have made a huge leap forward in terms of their quality and, you know, perhaps it's going to be sort of same old for Scotland come February.
Yeah, I mean, famous last words. I still don't think that England team is as good as that South Africa game shows. I still think that Scotland obviously have beaten them in recent games and won't be sort of too worried about taking them on. Ireland is the one that I just... If they can select that same basically Leinster side plus three or four really good players away from home, that's what I worry about. And although France have obviously just beat New Zealand and are in a very good place, like we still do very well against them. So
especially at home as well.
Yeah, exactly. So part of me is not that. Yeah, I mean it's going to be bloody tough, but I think if we can get back, Gray, Cummings is fit, and we don't have too many other injuries. Like, we've got a pretty settled side. And ultimately, if we can't do something with that side, which is, as a few people have said, like a bit of a once in a generation team, then, you know, what else can we do, really?
Alan, do you share Matt's optimism or kind of like cautious optimism?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I sort of increasingly think that last year was the Six Nations, or this year was the Six Nations that got away. That was our time to that bloody Welsh game, and then obviously we were still in it against Ireland. There was an opportunity there that ultimately we haven't had since 1999, which deeply frustrating. And I guess Yeah, I'm just wondering whether you're going to find a hot. I think we'll beat one of England and France at home, but I just don't see a scenario which we sort of probably beat both of them. And I think I still haven't seen enough from the Scotland team for me to believe that we can sort of go to Dublin and sort of take on that Irish team up front and get out of there with a win. So I think I'm sort of worst case scenario thinking is one win at the moment. I would say, given sort of the quality of Scotland's performances over the autumn and other teams, I would say best case scenario is probably sort of three wins. I do really think we need to be going to Wales and winning, though. Wales are not that good.
Yeah, Wales are not that good.
And whilst we did beat Wales away in the 26 Nations, ultimately that was in the autumn and it was like the Parky Scarlets. Like, it's very different to being like a Millennium Stadium in front of a crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I really think we need to be going there and trying to win our first match at the Millennium Stadium for a long time. So
100%. Well, on that note, why don't we leave it there? It's back to the old Clays and Purridge of the URC this weekend. So we'll be putting out a newsletter early next week covering all of that sort of stuff. And as ever, follow us on our social medias to keep up with everything going on in Scottish rugby. Now that I understand that Edinburgh are saying that the 1872 Cup Derby is bigger than all of us, you can expect to see a lot of things making fun of that on Twitter, which is at Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. And that newsletter is on Substack, the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. And please do let us know, why do you not like Blair Kinghorn? Or on the other side of the coin, if you do like Blair Kinghorn, send us an email, thistlerugby@gmail.com. Otherwise, we will be in touch with you guys very soon. Cheers.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.